Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, we are winding down with our win totals predictions. Camp is starting. Pads are popping. We've got to get our final preseason predictions out of here, Barton, because the preseason, this is it. If you're going to call your shot, and we're going to do our national championship predictions later. We might make our Heisman calls a little bit later, but man, all that's going to be coming out in the next 2 weeks. So our team by team win totals predictions, we're getting close to wrapping this up right here. We're going to take down the entire Pac-12 here in this episode for you. Are you ready?
Chip, I'm sitting here as we discuss this podcast, as we get going. I'm watching Ohio State practice clips on Bucknuts.com, 24/7 Sports. So there's actual practices that have taken place by the time we're having this conversation, which is awesome. So I'm ready to roll.
All right, any instant OSU takes from Bucknuts?
No, you can't learn anything from it. But honestly, they filmed the guys running out to practice, and I got chills. I'm so excited just to see guys actually wearing helmets running out to a meaningful workout. And they look so excited. And it's an overcast day. This just looks like it's a day for football, and I'm excited about it. So now we can get this one more conference, the Pac-12, wrapped up, and we can start figuring out who's balling in practice.
Absolutely. All right, well, we are going to just go ahead and dive right in. And the fun with the Pac-12 is that in my mind, and I think popularly across the country, the big question is whether USC doesn't have to deal with the back, they don't have to deal with the same back big looming cloud of expectations necessarily that Miami does. You know what everyone always wants to talk about is the U back, But this is the highest set of expectations that the Trojans have had since Matt Barkley announced that he was going to return for his senior year. They start the year, I believe, number one or number two in the country in the preseason poll, and that season ended with them getting their butts kicked by Georgia Tech in the Sun Bowl while Lane Kiffin was wearing a Stormtrooper wind protector. We have not had a set of expectations for USC football in the preseason that has been fulfilled come December or January since Pete Carroll was on the sidelines and Reggie Bush was winning Heisman trophies. Yes, Reggie Bush won that Heisman trophy. So, as we're looking at USC football coming off just a great surge at the end of last season with Clay Helton, Sam Darnold, NFL number one, pro talent, unbelievable talent. How do we, when we start to peel back the layer on the Trojans, Barton, what do you see from an honest perspective? Because it is very easy for fans to get hung up in just the big, exciting question and possibility that USC football is going to be competing for a national championship.
Well, how crazy is college football, first of all? Just the fact that last year they opened the season with a 52-6 loss to Alabama.
Spanking.
Nothing that should ever happen to any USC football program or team in the history of the program. Just embarrassing loss. 46 points. And Clay Helton looks totally in over his head. They start the season 1-3. They lose to Stanford and Utah right off the jump. The Stanford game wasn't even close. And so and now here we are a year later, and then who would have guessed after that 1-3 start we'd be talking about USC as a legitimate national title favorite. I think there's only two teams with better national title odds right now, according to Vegas, than USC. So it's really crazy to think that Clay Helton was basically a dead man walking in early September last year. But I think the national title expectations are real. I think that this is a team. I had a chance to visit USC this summer. I went up there for a a recruit, a camp, and got a chance to hang around the program a little bit for a day. And look, they love Clay Helton there. Like, this is a coach that has endeared himself to that staff. They believe in him. The players believe in him. And so after all that uncertainty early on, I think he's got everybody pulling in the same direction. And I think this team has absolutely got the pieces to contend. I mean, they have the best player, the best quarterback in college football, probably the number one draft pick next year, Sam Darnold. I think that if he meets expectations this year, he'll probably be the top guy taken. They've got probably the best, I'd say the deepest running back field in the country.
I was gonna put the Sam Darnold Ronald Jones combo up there with Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley, a duo that we talked about as, like, you know, just in terms of very different, both in terms of style, but at least in terms of, like, combined potency, like that twosome is scary, like, will terrify opposing defensive coordinators.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I totally agree with that. But I think the beauty of their backfield is after Ronald Jones, Vivai Malapiai is really good. They're buzzing about him there. Stephen Carr is one of the top incoming recruits in the country. And Aka Cedric Ware really had a nice year last year as well when he got on the field. So there's a lot of bodies they can throw at you to wear you down on defense. Out of that backfield. So they're really talented there. They've got a bunch of 4- and 5-star wide receivers that have been waiting their turn that are about to step up to the plate. Their offensive line is experienced. Toa Lobendon, Vianne Talamaivao, they're both guys I think are really good. And when I was out there watching spring practice, Chuma Edoga, who's their left tackle, who's from McEachern, Georgia. He was 6'3 coming out of high school, but he ran like a 4.6 40. Like, he was so super athletic. I didn't know if he had the size to really be a tackle. I think he's a true tackle out there, and he was awesome when I watched him in practice. Like, he was dominating in the run game. He was great in pass protection. Really liked him. So it was just offensively, they've just got every piece you could want.
All right. Number one, other college football analysts are already weeks behind Barton Simmons on the pronunciation of USC's team.
I've got a lot of practice following these guys in high school.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, you're killing it. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the tape on this when I'm editing it and work on my own. Like it'll be my Rosetta Stone for making sure I got this down. All right, so I was going to guess specifically about the wide receiver position, because between Juju Smith-Schuster and Darius Rogers, like, to me, those are not only great players, but it was a lot of balls. Like, it was a lot of receptions out there, and now it looks like a total reboot, and you feel very confident, it sounds like, about the next players that are stepping up there.
Well, I really like Michael Pittman. He is a big, strong kid. You saw him last year, but you saw him on special teams. Like, he was coming down the field smacking people on punt coverage.
Ooh,
and kickoff
like
coverage.
That. Like
so
that
that's, I mean, he's a strong, he's 6'4", he's 210, he's a physical, tough kid. That's, and frankly, with this team, there's going to be some big opportunities to just make some downfield blocks and be tougher than the defensive backs and spark some big runs with Sam Darnold and those backs. So I think that's a big part of it too. But I think he's going to have a breakout year. Deontay Burnett is I think, going to have an opportunity to be a national name. You got Steven Mitchell in there, who's a senior, who's flashed, who's sort of that
inside. Yeah, he's been good in space, like in spots.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like he flashes from time to time. And then you got guys like Tyler Vaughns, who's a redshirt freshman. Redshirted last year, was skinny, but one of the best sets of hands and ball skills you're going to find in the country. So they've been recruiting at wide receiver really, really well. T. Martin has been bringing in some great receiver groups.
And they were, like, they're all redshirting last year. Like, they had so much talent redshirting last year. And that's exciting, not only for USC national championship contention now, but, like, the fact that they're going to be able to terrorize the Pac-12 for the next couple years.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the thing, and you bring me to sort of another point, is – my only question with USC is if Sam Darnold gets hurt, because they will continue terrorizing the Pac-12 for the next couple of years. But if Sam Darnold goes pro, like we probably think he will, I'm not super confident in the quarterback room behind Sam Darnold right now. Ooh. They got a kid named Jack Sears coming in as a freshman. that I think is got a chance to be really good, but you don't know that on freshmen until they actually show up. And I think beyond him, they don't have much. I don't think they got a guy ready to go right now. Matt Fink is their backup, not a kid I was a big fan of coming out of high school in terms of just as a thrower. He's athletic. I don't really love him as a thrower. So there's their Achilles heel. You know, they got to keep Sam Darnold healthy because they got all these skill players that can get the football to, who can make plays. They just got to have their trigger man healthy all the way through.
What a sick defense, though.
Dude, these guys are savages.
Dude, all right, so Cameron Smith healthy, Porter Gustin healthy, linebackers just totally stacked. You still got, like, Rasheem Green. Let's see, is Kenny Bigelow healthy?
Kenny Bigelow's gone, isn't he?
Gone?
Did Kenny Bigelow transfer?
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'm the Khalil Rogers transferred, I know. Kenny Bigelow, I think Kenny Bigelow's still there. He's just never been a guy I've been super impressed with. You know who's going to start over Kenny Bigelow is Marlon Tuipulotu, who's another name to remember, because he's a true freshman, already won the starting job in spring practice. Was already working with the ones, stud. He was the number one defensive tackle in the country.
Tuipulotu. Marlon Tuipulotu.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's already beat out Kenny Bigelow for the starting job. So I was off on that, on him being a transfer.
Oh, no, I mean, you got to think that, like, the reason I know Kenny Bigelow is because it was like a big signing day name from, what, 4 years ago?
Oh, he was a big signing day name, and honestly, I've tracked him because I always was worried that the industry had Kenny Bigelow overrated. I never was necessarily sold on him, and I think he has been a little bit disappointing in his career. He's a senior this year. This is his last chance to really make good on that, you know, that upside and that potential. But even if he doesn't, Marlon Tuipulotu is going to be a dude. Rasheem Green, this year is the year he really comes into his own. He was young and raw coming in, but he is a freak athletically and talent wise. You mentioned Porter Gustin, Cameron Smith, and then their defensive backfield with Jack Jones stepping into a starting role more than likely.
Oh, Biggie Marshall.
Biggie Marshall is out there, junior already. Man, these guys are getting old on us. And then Marvell Tell, and they got a couple other safety bodies that are really talented. So there's talent all over the place on defense. They've been recruiting well enough at USC. It's going to be – I mean, they got the bodies. They got the dudes. They can get this thing done.
All right, so the win total is at 9.5. How do we feel about that?
I think you got to take the over. I've been taking a lot of the overs on the number one team in each conference, and I guess I just sort of agree with the standings right now. I'm not sure I've picked one that's going to disappoint yet, but it's another one of those deals where, look, I feel better about the over than the under. They're not going to – I mean, can you see them going 9-3?
No.
That'd be disappointing. Uh-uh. That'd be really disappointing. Now, it's a tough schedule. Here's the other thing to think about with the USC is they don't have a bye week. They go all the way through. No breaks. They have the last 2 weeks of the regular season they have off. But then they play Texas out of conference. They play Notre Dame at Notre Dame mid-year. So it's not an easy stretch for them by any means. But I just, you know, I'm going to feel better about 10-2 than 9-3.
I think that 9-3, don't see it. I think that you'll have you're going to have one trap loss, right?
Yeah.
Washington State, maybe.
Absolutely, Friday night. I'm with you, Chip. Like, I saw that one, and I was like, "Whoa, that's gonna be a dangerous spot right there."
Yeah, you got to go ahead and tally that one up, and then maybe later in the season, you know, depending on how things break, depending on what Notre Dame looks like. I like that they're able to get Utah at home.
Yeah.
Colorado is just going to be a very different team than it was a year ago. That doesn't scare me quite as much. I am all the way in on the over 9.5. I am feeling pretty good that they're going to be winning in the Pac-12 championship game. But I don't, you know, you get that extra week of preparation. That could be good, could be bad. But I think that USC gets to the college football playoff and gets beat in the semifinals.
I like the prediction. I'm about in the same spots. Lock me in for the over.
All right, cool. Now, the team that Barton called way, 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 way before anybody else on College Football Rundown and other assorted CBS Sports Digital, 24/7 Sports properties and shows. I have no idea what we're going to call it this year, but I'm sure that we're going to be bringing you all of the video content that you could ever want to put on your Apple TV and mobile device. But you were on Washington before anybody else was, man. You were there. Like, you were about it. What did you see in the Huskies that led you to believe that they were ready to make this jump under Chris Peterson?
You know, well, first of all, it was Chris Peterson. And second of all, you know, they had a young quarterback who's played as a freshman that was good. He would have taken a step forward. Miles Gaskin played as a freshman, was good. He was going to take a step forward. Their defense was sick. I love their defensive backfield. I love their defensive front. So, and really, I'll be honest with you, the other thing that I really liked last year was I looked at their schedule, and they had, you know, they had Stanford at home on like a Friday night. They had USC at home, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they just had opportunities to, you know, the schedule set up for if someone was to make a run. I think Washington had the chips were lined up the right way. So that was sort of last year, and also I liked that they were coming. No one was really expecting them, and someone had to be that team that surprised people. This year, for whatever reason, I look at them. Let me say this. On the surface, I was like, oh, this was probably maybe a take a step back type of year. And just because they did all that last year and
lost a lot of key pieces in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, like three legit first round talents.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. But yeah, I just sort of assumed this wasn't a team that we should talk about for like national titles. But then I really look at the roster and, man, I don't know. Like, this is maybe I'm overlooking them, or maybe we've overlooked them again, because this is going to be a really tough team to handle once again. I mean, look, they're really good bookend tackles. Offensive tackles are back. They lose a big-time NFL receiver, but Dante Pettis is no slouch, as a go-to guy, and they really only threw to him and John Ross last year. Like, they only had two guys that really caught significant amount of footballs. They've got plenty of talent out of the backfield of Miles Gaskin and Chico McClatcher, who's kind of a receiver who they'll get the ball to some in the run game. So offense, they seem to be – I mean, they'll be fine. And defensively, they still got Vita Vea, who's probably a potential first-round draft pick, Azeem Victor, who's, maybe a first-round draft pick, Taylor Rapp, who's the freshman defensive player of the year last year in the Pac-12. So, God, I mean, I started to dig in, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Man, these guys, are they going to sneak up on us again? I mean, they're going to be really good, Chip. What, I mean,
talk to me. Yeah, like, all right, so here's – I think that a step back, it might be in store for Washington, but I think that that's also because when I'm trying to find the teams that they're going to be playing on the schedule, like – the step back is still going to be probably contending for the Pac-12 North, but I'm just bullish on Stanford. And I just think that's – and we'll get to the Cardinal here in a little bit, but, like, I just – I'm looking at it, and I'm feeling man.
You know, here's the play. So if you want to look smart, you pick Washington in the playoffs again as a Pac-12 champion, because you're going to get to about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You're going to get to week 11, and they'll be 9-0, and they'll be ranked in the top 5, and then they get at Stanford, Utah, Washington State. Like, that's – I could see that, like, where – because they're not going to lose any of their three non-conferences. At Colorado, at Oregon State, Cal, at Arizona State, like – those three away games are probably all losable, but they're not. They'll be maybe double digit favorites.
Is Jake Browning sneaky Heisman dark horse just because he's going to be the quarterback of like a 9-0 team come November?
Yeah, he probably will be the same way he was this past year. But I'm gonna tell you what, I am not a Jake Browning believer. I'm a Jake Browning truther.
Like I kind of feel like defensive coordinators are going to figure him out.
He just doesn't have a ton of arm talent. He's just a really good – I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a good quarterback. But he's not an NFL quarterback to me.
But here's the thing is he gets to play let's look at these defenses. Fresno State, Cal, Arizona State. I mean, we're talking about traffic cone defensive backfields. You know?
You're right.
And you mentioned it. Like, Dante Pettis, my favorite thing about Dante Pettis, and I think that I forgot which game. It might have been he had at least a couple of big returns. His play in the special teams is huge.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
He had two touchdowns on punt returns last year. He may have had one on kick. I don't know. I mean, that's him, man. He's an X factor in that regard. I think the key is going to be that stretch of really you can extend it to five games: UCLA, Oregon, at Stanford, Utah, and Washington State. So they'll be
picked apart for having a soft schedule. Like they're going to be catching that same kind of heat from all the pundits when they are. Like we start releasing the college football playoff selection committee rankings in like mid-October, and they're going to be undefeated, so they're going to be up in the mix, and that is going to be like you want to talk about calling our shot. We're about to go give our over under predictions for 10, but like I'll call my shot and feel even more confident that Washington is going to just be ripped apart by pundits for having a soft schedule when they're going to be put up against like a nasty one loss Florida State or something like that.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. Like, hey, if you pick Washington in the playoffs, hey, go ahead and retweet that pick like October 7th through October 28th.
Bump.
Like, retweet the hell out of that thing. Because you're going to be in jeopardy once October 28th hits. I'm going to go, as I've talked through this, I'm going to go under, pushed under. I think they lose in that final stretch. That five game tear, I think they lose two of those and maybe three. I would think they would lose three is more likely than they only lose one.
What if it's? I'll tell you what. I'll go push to under, but I'm gonna say they definitely aren't gonna be able to beat USC in the Pac-12 championship game. And depending on how the head to heads break, may not win the division.
We're on the same page. I'm with you.
All right. The Stanford Cardinal. Big season, man. Right?
Big season. Yeah.
How do we feel about the quarterback position right now? Because I'm big on Bryce Love. Got to shout out the Triangle area here in North Carolina. He was from Wake Forest, the powerhouse of the Cap 8 conference. Man, I just... Where was the concern? Where is the concern level regarding the quarterback position for Stanford?
That's a great question. That is the Stanford season. It boils down to that question: is can we have any confidence that Keller Christ is it the dude? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I do think Stanford has developed quarterbacks. I mean, Kevin Hogan sort of had moments in his career where he was pretty mediocre. And then you look up at the end of his career and he's a NFL draft pick. And, you know, you're like, hey, that's...
He had like 40 wins as a starting quarterback or something ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess Keller Christ doesn't quite have that sort of experience to build on and to dip into. But... I think the way I typically feel about Stanford is that they'll get their quarterback figured out. They don't exactly, I don't know. They're creative enough offensively. Mike Bloomgren's a really good offensive coordinator. David Shaw obviously has a big role in that offense as well. I think that they'll figure it out. Did you ever listen to Bill Simmons and the Ewing theory? When he would talk about how, you know, it started with Patrick Ewing when he left the Knicks, they got better because of it.
Right.
Like, I could see this being where Christian McCaffrey is gone and their offense is better because of it. Just because it forces them to get everyone else involved. It forces other guys to step up and make plays. They can't just rely on Christian McCaffrey. That offense was totally geared around McCaffrey. I mean, everything they did was about getting him the ball, finding different creative ways to get him touches. And, you know, in some ways, they're still very – I mean, Bryce Love, as you mentioned, is really good. They've got some quality receivers. They'll get into those two tight end sets with Caden Smith and Dalton Schultz and Kobe Parkinson, who's the best tight end in the country from the freshman class. And I think their offensive line should be improved. It was not as good as it typically has been last year. So I think they'll be better there. And I just think – I think this is going to be one of those – I think this is a dark horse team. I think this is a team that is – I will spoiler here. I'm just going to go over. I think feel good about the over. I just think this is the year that Stanford takes a big step, surprises some people, and is like one of the real national powers.
That the thing about their offensive line, which is so huge to everything that they want to do, is that like they get off the bus and they look Stanford. You know, they look like one of these offensive lines that was blocking for Stephen Taylor as they're winning, you know, 10, 11 games right, and going to a Rose Bowl. They're all like 6'4", 6'5", 300 pounds. They got a lot of upperclassmen in that rotation. Casey Tucker, like, good player. But as a unit last year, man, like, what happened?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, I think that they were, you know, they lost a lot of NFL guys over the last couple years. Maybe this was just their rebuilding cycle. Keep in mind, too, one thing to remember about Stanford is they signed two of the top three offensive tackles in the country in this past class. And they signed who I had ranked at 24/7 as the number one player in the class of 2017. And this kid, Walker Little.
So, oh, Walker Little's a monster.
I would not be shocked if they've got a true freshman starting at right or left tackle this fall at some point in the process. Like, he is an absolute beast.
Isn't he like 7 feet? Like, isn't he like 8 feet, 500 pounds?
He's like pushing 6'8", and he's like 317, and he is the real deal. So I mean, we'll see how Mike Bloomgren feels weaving him in and getting those guys involved. Foster Sorrell is the other one, who's like 6'6", 320, who was number one player in the country for a while in the class. So they've got dudes on that offensive front, and whether this is the year they're all the way back, they will be all the way back on the offensive line before long. So they'll be all right there, I think. And then I tell you, you got to mention defensively too. I think this is one of the best secondaries in college football.
Ooh,
I think Elijah Holder and Quentin Meeks are maybe as good as any pair of corners in the country. I love those two guys. And Justin Reed, the younger brother of Eric Reed, is, I think, a beast at safety, is about to have a breakout season. So defensively, they're going to be great, as they typically are. I just look top to bottom. This Stanford team gets me excited. Like, if with everywhere, like we said, except for quarterback, if they can just find consistent play at quarterback, I think they're going to be really good.
Yeah, 8.5 is too low. Like, I would adjust the Bovada 8.5 to a 9 or 9.5, and then at 9 or 9.5, I have to start to start to figure out how I'm feeling about it. But the reason why I love them as a Pac-12 North favorite, one of the reasons why I really really like that is that I think that the only two games in conference play that I'm looking at as potential losses are to Pac-12 South teams, which means I think that they should get that like almost two-game advantage that you get from the head-to-head tiebreakers on a Washington or an Oregon, because they get both of them at home.
Yeah. Yeah, at USC, at Utah is rough.
It's tough. I mean, those are the two games that to me are the toughest conference games on their schedule. I think they take care of business against Rice and San Diego State.
Well, and this is, I mean, not to cut you off, sorry, I thought you were closing out there, but this is a tough schedule top to bottom, because, yeah, they get Rice, but you mentioned at San Diego State. They're at Oregon State on a Thursday night, at Washington State. Now they got Notre Dame to end the season. They got Washington. I mean, this is one of the tougher schedules out there, I would imagine.
I mean, that could help them in the college football playoff, but that would also mean that they would have to win the North and then also win in a rematch versus USC. But those would be about as impressive a wins as you could have coming down the stretch. What about Stanford as a playoff dark horse?
Yeah, if they can roll through this schedule, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I think that's their ceiling is playoffs. I think they could get there. It's the eighth toughest schedule in the country preseason. So that's a pretty good, you know, feather in your cap there for the college football playoffs. I think if they can get through this regular season with one loss and get to the Pac-12 title game, they're in if they win.
The Colorado had an unbelievable season last year. Great breakthrough. Pac-12 South champions. Mike McIntyre, coach of the year pretty much across the board. But man, like the defense in particular, and that defense was a strong part, especially in the defensive backfield, a strong part of a lot of their success. Well, just all over the board, that team just had a lot of juniors and seniors. This team has lost a ton of the key players from a year ago. Man, I'm looking at 7.5 as the over-under here, and I'm feeling very confident about the under. Just with so many question marks, and with it being, and like, I hate that I'm leaning on this, but with it being Colorado, you know?
Yeah, I actually think that's fair. I mean, because last year was really a perfect storm in a lot of ways. They did have all kinds of senior leadership and experience and guys that have been through the fire. And Jim Leavitt had put together a really good defense, and they had a quarterback that was tough and a good leader. And I still think offensively they're going to score points this year. I think, you know, Steven Montez played last year. He has a little bit of experience. They've got, what, 9 starters returning. All their top pass receivers are returning. Philip Lindsay's a good back. They'll be okay on offense. And really, even like last year, I remember turning on Colorado beginning of the year and watching them against Colorado State. And I was like, whoa, like what? Who are these guys? Like, who is this Colorado team that is really fun to watch and just getting after Colorado State? They beat them like 44-7 and play with great pace. So they've got a little bit of like the Texas Tech tempo. They're going to be tough to defend, but again, they lost Jim Leavitt. They lost 8 starters, a bunch of NFL guys on defense. Not a lot of guys on that defensive side of the ball that I look at and I'm like, and I'm super worried about offensively. So I'm with you. I like the under. DJ Elliott was a good defensive coordinator hire, but I think this year they take a step back. I think it's a 7-win season, feels right to me.
Yeah, 7-5, and a fun 7-5 in there. I think that there's going to be. I don't think there's going to be many. And this is one thing, especially about a big step back from like playing in the Pac-12 championship, is while Chidobe Awuzie or Tedric Thompson, like those players that I was referencing in the open, while they are gone, it's not like the players that are coming up behind them didn't benefit from all of that experience. I feel like Colorado is going to be in a lot of games, but when it comes to like picking them to win 8 of them, I just can't go there. 7-5. Give me the under.
Yeah. We're on the same page there. Are we agreed on everything so far?
Think so.
That's all right, man. That's consensus money making right there.
Well, exactly. So if you've been fading us, then you should feel super confident in your fade picks. But boy, invest in Jake Brown and win in 11 games at your own risk.
That's right.
All right, Willie Taggart arrives in Eugene, Oregon. It has been a little bit of a tumultuous first couple of months, but in a way, I think the fact that Oregon has flown below the radar here after the first start to the Willie Taggart era during the offseason with the conditioning, with assistant coaches, you know, there has been less Oregon in the headlines, and I think Willie Taggart would say that's a good thing. What do we know about Willie Taggart? We believe that in bringing the same offense that made guys like Quentin Flowers and Marlon Mack like must-see TV in the American Athletic Conference, that the skill position talent that should be in place at Oregon is gonna fit. Now that I think that the popular concerns of the final years of Oregon football probably still exist, where you're looking at the defensive side of the ball and you're trying to figure out what it's going to look like and whether they're going to be able to get the stops they need to close games out. I feel like Willie Taggart. All right, let's go. First of all, Willie Taggart, did you like the hire? Do you think it's a good fit? Like, is this a transition that you think will allow both school and coach to continue to grow after, you know, still being big picture in their infancy among college football, you know, big time college football?
I liked the hire. I suspected that it was a good fit. And then as I've seen the hires he's made subsequently and the way they've recruited since that hire, I feel even more confident that it's a good fit. I think he's going to win games here. And I think he's put together a staff that's going to recruit really well, because that's the big thing that Oregon was missing, is they had fallen into this complacency as a recruiting staff where they could just rely on the offensive scheme and the pace and the uniforms and the facilities, and they could get guys all over the country and didn't have to work as hard. Well, everyone plays with a pace now. Everyone has, you know, high powered offenses. Everyone has uniform combinations, and everyone has crazy facilities. So the playing field got leveled, and Oregon didn't keep up at doing what they had to do recruiting wise. Willie Taggart has come in and hit the ground running. They're already a top 10 class in this 2018 cycle recruiting. I think the hires he's made, guys like Mario Cristobal,
Jim Levitt,
Joe Salavea, who's a great recruiter on the defensive front, really good poly recruiter. And then Jim Levitt, I think the long and short of it is, like, I don't know if this defense is going to be great this year, but they're going to have good defense in Eugene with Jim Levitt there in the future. So that is encouraging. They're going to be able to score points because Willie Taggart has proven he can do that. But ultimately, this was, you know, last year wasn't as much a talent problem as much as it was a culture problem. I just think it was a soft team. They were finessed. They had sort of become a little bit entitled. And you saw it during the year. I mean, true freshmen were calling out the upperclassmen publicly. Brendan Schooler was one of those guys. And so I think that there's a toughness that needs to be ingrained in this team. And the fact that you can't really do that in just one cycle is why I'm a little bit on the under. I think it's easy to look at Oregon and be like, oh, 4-8, Willie Taggart's here, hot new coach, experienced quarterback, we got skill. Yeah, 8-4. But I think it's going to take a little bit more time. I don't think this is going to be a team that's just all of a sudden is night and day different. I'm going under. I mean, I think kind of 7-5 is, to me, is a fair improvement and a reasonable improvement, and still one that's significant, but it's not over the top. So I lean under here with Oregon. I think they'll be a really good team. I think they'll be a tough out for everybody, but I don't know that you fix all the problems from last year in just one cycle.
Man, but like Royce Freeman's still there. Tony Brooks James still there.
Is and I like Royce Freeman, but who'd you compare him to? Like, who's what tier nationally at the running backs would you put him in? He's not in that like Saquon Barkley, Darius Geis, Nick Chubb tier. He's probably in either the tier below that
he's this year's Donnell Pumphrey, where you're going to like tune in and you're going to be like, oh, damn, there's another 120-yard game. Oh, damn, there's another 120-yard game.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tough dude to bring down. There's no question. He's a big, strong, physical cat. But I don't know if – I don't know if you put him on your back. And they lost Darren Carrington, who's their best receiver coming back.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, I think they'll be good. I think they'll be a 7-win team. But you sound like you're ready to go 8 or 9 wins.
Yeah, I'm pushed to over, and here's why. I think I mentioned it for Nebraska. I feel like that Nebraska game in Eugene is just going to be huge. Nebraska is going to be taking a little bit of a step back. They're going to be like jazzed up for it, and so if that's a win, and if they can avoid getting trapped at Arizona State, I see this Oregon team starting 5-0 and maybe 6-0 before they have to go to Stanford. And then things are going to get rough where you go at Stanford, at UCLA, Utah. Like, that's probably 2 losses right there. At Washington gives you 3. But then you finish with Arizona at home and then the Civil War at home. I can get to 8-4 pretty quickly. And depending on whether or not they're able to avoid like losing at UCLA and at Arizona State, then you know maybe this thing gets to 9-3. But again, like, because they're going to lose at Stanford and at Washington, I'm not going to consider them a Pac-12 dark horse. I'm not going to consider them a Pac-12 North favorite. But I think that with the schedule, with Justin Herbert taking a step forward, and the defense is what concerns me, because it took Jim Leavitt 2 years to turn a horrendous Colorado defense, start to turn a horrendous Colorado defense around. So it's not going to be instant. But I think I really like Royce Freeman. I think there's just going to be like a steady production, and the fact that they're just going to be able to outgun some of these teams in the Pac-12 before they get into like mid-October. I think you stack up those wins, you build some confidence. I think 8-4 is where I'm setting the bar. So I'm push to over on my pick.
Okay. I mean, let me just throw this out. Do you remember how bad USF was that first year of Willie Taggart's, where they went 2-10 and didn't even look 2 wins good?
Yeah.
And that's not to say that necessarily translates to this, except for the fact that like Willie Taggart is going to build for the long game. Like, this isn't I don't think he's the type of coach that's looking for some overnight quick fix. And I think he is installing a culture, and I just think that takes a little time to catch hold. So I hear you. I'm going to stay with my under. So here's our first disagreement. I think it'll be a really interesting year where they have a lot of highs and a couple of lows. Like, I could see they go Nebraska, at Wyoming, at Arizona State in weeks 2, 3, 4. Those are 3 games that we'll find out a lot about them. Like, yeah, if they take care of business in those 3,
which is what I'm predicting. Like, I'm predicting that they're gonna tear through the first half of that schedule and build a lot of good juice moving forward.
And that's fair. And if they do, then I'll be sitting here. You know, you'll already be able to. I'll wave the white flag and say, all right, you're gonna win this one. But I bet you that they slip up somewhere along the way, whether it's against Cal or Arizona State or even Wyoming on the road.
Allen just lights them up on his NFL draft game.
There's some traps in there. There's some tricky spots, some booby traps they got to avoid. And if they do, then hey, you're on it. I think that if they take care of business in the games they're supposed to win, then it'll be a really good year.
All right, on to UCLA, where you've got Josh Rosen, and a huge season for Jim Mora to prove to us that the Jim Mora at UCLA experience is worth all of the hype. Because when you look at his tenure there, it is, especially considering that USC has been down, I think that ultimately we will look back at this and be a little bit disappointed that UCLA didn't win more, whether it was with Brett Hundley, whether it was with Josh Rosen. And I know Josh Rosen had to get shut down last year for health. But when you have USC, big, badass USC, having its down cycle, man, in the world of division football, you've got to be able to surge. Like in the ACC, when Florida State and Clemson were down, Boston College and Wake Forest won conference titles. You got to figure out a way to get up there, and UCLA hasn't really been able to do it. Man, 6.5 here. Where's our head at with the Bruins?
Well, at 6, if the over-under is 6.5, aren't we basically saying that it's a over-under on whether or not Jim Mora is the head coach next year?
100%.
Like, if he's under 6.5, brother, he's looking for a new job, I think. I think even more than that, like, I think if we look at week 1 with Texas A&M at home for UCLA, that one is a game where the loser of that game probably has a new head coach next year.
Instant hot seat. Like,
yeah.
Scorching.
Like, and then I think, and both of those teams have some other losable games early. I mean, if say UCLA loses to A&M, they're not going to be favored against Stanford by any stretch. And so if they start the season, say 2 or 3-2 even, with still Utah and USC and Oregon on the schedule, it's going to be tricky. So where I'm at with UCLA is I think you have Rosen who is obviously a first round talent and he's a stud, but his health is a question mark. They were like second worst in the country last year running the football. And I know all those guys, like the offensive line returns, their running backs return, but they return the guys that were the worst in the country running the football. So I don't know how we have a lot of confidence in their run game. You know, they've got a new offensive coordinator in Jed Fish who that doesn't.
Yo,
that doesn't
all respect to Jed Fish, but man, he's like a wet sandwich of an excitement hire.
It doesn't exactly like move the needle in terms of just flipping the offense around. I just think this is a team that is. I look at their team offensively and defensively, and I kind of see front runners. I don't feel like they're tough. I think this is play the sound, Chip. Let's just play the sound. I'll let Gabe Marks talk for me.
They kind of come off as bad guys when they do things like that. I don't know if they do that to everybody, but it's just kind of like, you know, it's kind of douchey, you know? Is that like okay to say? Mm-hmm. I mean, don't cut that. Let's be honest. It makes you look like you're trying to be tough because everyone thinks that, you know, because you live in Westwood and you wear baby blue that you're not tough, and it makes you look less tough because you're trying too hard. It's just weird, you know? You don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that.
I love it. I love my dude Gabe Marks. That guy is the best quote in college football, but he said, like, it was such a good soundbite for UCLA because it was after UCLA had gone, like they played Washington State.
They warmed up on their side of the field or something.
Yeah, like just the stupid kind of weird, like tough guy thing to do. And then they go out and get beat. And it's like, that to me is what UCLA needs to put up or shut up. Like, be about that life or not. Like, you need to come on the field and like they were 4-8 last year. And they were throwing it 71 times with their backup quarterback. I mean, what are you? You got a top 100 running back in Soso Jimabo in your backfield. You've recruited well. You've got a bunch of offensive linemen that were highly recruited guys. You got a first-round NFL draft pick as an edge rusher. I just this is not a team that necessarily – I just don't know if I line them up in a dark alley and think they're going to come out and win the street fight. The exception to that, I love Kenny Young. I think he's a really good linebacker. I think Jaleel Wadud is a really good safety. But I don't have confidence in this team to hit the over. I lean under on this squad. And I think to me it's just about toughness. They don't strike me as a tough football team.
And you know what is the other part of that toughness is that I don't have confidence that if things go poorly early that they're not just going to pack it up.
Agree. I think it's, yeah, same. Like that is in sort of the same train of thought. Like, and I think the coaching situation will contribute to that too. Like if there's suddenly
– Dog, they could lose at Memphis. What if Mike Norvell lights them up and all of a sudden they are like 1-3 going into a home game against Colorado September 30th that like nobody comes to?
Yeah, that's a tough – the AD gets a little bit of heat for that one because, man, you're scheduling a road game all the way out in Memphis for a team that's hot. That's going to be a tough matchup. So, yeah, I think they have Colorado's will be quality. I mean, they got four losable games up front. It's going to be
you
got to
go at
schedule.
Washington, at Utah, at USC down the stretch.
Yeah, those are three losses. I mean, just chalk those up right now.
We just got to 6-6 real fast.
Right.
Like, and that's not even like considering the idea that they could just like totally pack it up and then like lose to I mean, yeah, the question in my mind is going to be, how does UCLA's administration handle this? Do they isn't Tom Bradley still on the staff?
DC, yeah.
Think. He's been an interim before. He can do this.
Right. Yeah. And look, hey, Josh Rosen could put him on his deck. It'll be a fascinating season for Josh Rosen because he's like I said, he's got not only first round draft pick, he's got number one overall ability. So does Josh Rosen have that year that we've all been waiting for him to have and just puts him on his back and is in the Heisman finalist at the end of the year? I mean, it could flip that way too, but I don't necessarily have the full confidence in Rosen's health. Don't necessarily have full confidence in the guys around him. You know, I'm going to feel better about a 6-6 than a 7-5 at the squad.
Washington State. I feel like Washington State in the Luke Falk era, and maybe even the success of Luke Falk as just a grander statement on Mike Leach, but the time that he has spent there and the work that he has put in sort of has me in a spot with Washington State where I'm thinking, you know, like this will be his sixth season. He's 29-34, but moving forward, like unless something crazy happens, I assume that Washington State is going to be a like 6 or 7 or 8 win team pretty much every, like won't dip below a 5-7, maybe if the quarterback gets hurt and they just don't have a backup that's ready to go. But there is some like some real consistency to this program that that I think is the next step to like really ensuring some longevity for Coach Leach and Pullman.
I really like this team. I agree. And I think that this is – it's a slow grind to get here with Washington State. It's not an easy fix. You can't just right away have a top 10 recruiting class and you're off and running. It takes some time. And I think right now we're going to look at the most talented roster Mike Leach has had. They returned 16 starters.
Up front on offense.
Solid up front offensively. They return 9 on defense. Hercules Mataafa, who is one of the best defensive linemen in America. You know, Luke Falk, as you mentioned, like Luke Falk is has to be the odds on favorites to come in like 4th in the Heisman Trophy. You know what
he
I mean?
Won't,
like,
yeah, he won't win it, but he's going to put up some numbers and take down some career records that'll keep his name in the headlines.
Exactly. Like he might do just enough to sniff New York, but no shot at the actual trophy. But he's going to be really good. You know, as I was scouring the country this spring for spring games, I wasn't able to dig up Washington State's, but that was one I would have liked to have seen. But my guy Anthony Heron, who called the game for the Pac-12 Network, I asked him how they looked, and he said like he thought that this was one of the best rosters that he's seen for Washington State. He said Tavares Martin's got All-American written all over him, who's sort of the next in line. He's like a more talented version of Gabe Marks. I think James Williams is going to be really good as their running back, as they get him more touches. So I like this team a lot. I'm going to go over, and this is Mike Leach's. You remember that Texas Tech year when they beat Texas and
no, this ain't that year.
I'm just saying it's a year. He's got one of those in him.
I know.
Why isn't this year? I could see something. I could see Washington State. Anyways, I'm gonna pick them at 8-4. But like, if they win 9 or 10 games, it would not blow me away.
Sick. That's awesome.
You said they got USC Friday night. Like we both agree that's a tough spot for USC. There's an opportunity there for them to make some like national noise this fall.
That's fun. I'm going under. I think 7-5 sounds right. It's just the volatility is still there. Like it might be 8 wins. Like they might get to this might be an 8-5, but you know, matching last year's final record by the end of the season where they go and they win the bowl game. But I'm gonna go under. 7-5. We're taking the opposite side on that one.
So we got a couple money bets. Like we need to make a couple of $2 bets on this thing and see, you know, buy a beer or so after the season.
I think we'll be able to be at Jester's down in Fort Lauderdale pretty soon. So right. you can come play darts with Tom Fornelli and I in one of a legendary sports bar in the Office Park region of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, you strike me as a dart ringer, so I'll be careful on that one. But we'll get some beers on the line here.
All right. Oregon State is in a position where, you know, you talk about an uphill battle. It's not an instant fix. Like, geez, Gary Anderson, like, this is, I don't know what his contract is, but I kind of feel like you had to invest in him, like, super long term, right? Like, this, there is not much expectation that Oregon State's going to be out here competing for Pac-12 North titles really anytime soon. But this season brings some excitement. Over under 5.5. Barton, are the Beavs going to be bowling come December?
That's a big number, right?
It's a big number.
Were you surprised to see that number that big?
And just like gut instinct just pulled me to under real fast. Like I was just like 5.5. Nah, they're going to win 5 games. It'll be 5-7.
Because I want to like this team more than the sort of common perception. I want to pick over for Oregon, but I don't know if I can get above 5.5. I think this is, I mean, it's been a steady grind. It was 2-10 to 4-8 in year 3. I think this is just an incremental step forward. I think it's a 5-7 year. I mean Gary Anderson is a really good coach. He's in his third year. He's got his guys. He returns a lot of them. They're in his system. This sort of strikes me as a team that's going to shock somebody. They're gonna get a big upset. I don't know who it's going to be. You know, the Washingtons and USC's and Oregon's and I mean, they got Oregon last year, so that, you know, that they'll be on red alert. But I think everybody needs to take this game seriously, especially if you're playing at Corvallis. But that said, I think they may get an upset, but I don't know that they've got the consistency to be able to win it out. I think 5 wins sounds right. This is a team I think is going to be better than people realize, but just hard for me to get behind a bowl season with the other teams they got to beat.
Now, I will say, and we're going to get to the Copper State here in just a second once after we tackle Utah, but I do think that a lot of these down here near the bottom of the Pac-12 depend on where you're at with Arizona and Arizona State, and I will admit that I'm a big shruggy emoji right now. But let's hit the Utes first, a team where I feel much, much, much more confident in terms of like overall program stability. Like Kyle Whittingham, for those that don't remember, Kyle Whittingham was in an interesting spot with the administration there for a hot second. He had a lot of turnover on his staff, and I kind of felt like in the same way that there was that video of him sitting in the cafeteria through a fire alarm and just staying on the phone and just kept recruiting, even though everyone else had evacuated the cafeteria, he only had but so many minutes of the day, and he had planted his flag. That's the way it feels that Kyle Whittingham's done at Utah. He's planted his flag. The fire alarms went off. Everybody freaked out and evacuated. And you know what? He's still there, and he is going to have nasty defenses, good special teams, and doggone it, like, he'll figure out a way. He might need Joe Williams to come out of retirement again, but he'll figure out a way to piece together a bowl caliber season. Like, am I off on that analysis?
No, man. I think Utah's going to be scary again. I think that this is the same Utah team we've always seen. And I mean, as far as defensively, they're going to be really good. Loa Lele is back. They lost some talent in the secondary, but they got two of the best JUCO defensive backs in the country, and Corion Ballard, who's probably going to be the starting free safety, and Marquise Blair, who's going to back up Chase Hansen, who's already a dude who's there. So their defensive front's going to be great. Kylie Fitz is back healthy. I mean, they're going to be really good defensively, like they always are. And then you look offensively. They're getting Darren Carrington, which is not insignificant.
Correct.
He's a grad transfer that just got a DUI at Oregon. Now he's going to Utah, and I think he's going to have an impact. They've got good receivers in that program. They lost a couple key guys, Tim Patrick, Corey Butler Bird, but they've got guys behind them that I think can play. Damari Simpkins being one of them, a young guy that just sort of sniffed it as a freshman. I think he'll be a good player. And then there's their quarterbacks. Not only is Troy Williams, I think, really capable.
Cooper Batman.
Cooper Bateman's there. That's right. And Tyler Huntley, who almost won the job as a true freshman last year, despite it not really supposed to be – it wasn't supposed to be a competition. And he kind of got in there in the mix. So they've got enough arms there that they can make some plays. And they've got a new offense this year. Troy Taylor is a new offensive coordinator. This is the same guy that coached Jake Browning to all these high school national records at Folsom Ooh. High School in California. He was at Eastern Washington last year. It's going to be a wide open offense, and I think it's the type of offense that will figure out a way to score points no matter what. And so I'm looking around, and I think this team's pretty dang good. Like, I think this is a team that is similar to last year, where you could see them beating just about anybody, and you don't think they're going to go undefeated, but you just every game you look at it and you say, well, watch out for Utah. So 6.5, am going to confidently go over.
Easy 7.
Yeah.
Like, I go like, and this is even like not even jumping on like North Dakota, San Jose State. And then I at Arizona, get Arizona State at home, you know, UCLA and Washington State both at home, Colorado at home. I think those are 8 games that I think that they could win, and that's confidently saying they win 7 of them.
Yeah, I'm probably still over at 7.5. You know,
wow.
I like this team a lot, and Kyle Whittingham is a really good coach. I liked your description of him, and this is just going to be another nasty physical team that just actually is a little prettier on the offensive side of the ball. And so I think they're going to be a good squad.
All right. Arizona's at 5. Arizona's at 5.5. Arizona State's at 5. Both are juiced to the under. Do you think between Rich Rodriguez and Todd Graham, who is more likely to still be the head coach in 2018?
I'll go Todd Graham on that one. And I think I just look at Arizona's roster, and no one's jumping out at me. Like, I'm not seeing the guys that are going to save the job. And I think an offense is probably going to be able to put up points. I don't necessarily see a defense that's going to be able to stop people. I mean, that defense has gotten worse every year, each of the past 4 seasons. And I don't know that there's any reason to think things are going to turn this year. I think they'll have a more healthy backfield. Nick Wilson, if he can stay healthy, is a really good back. They've got guys like Nathan Tilford at running back who's coming in, J.J. Taylor, Sean Brown, guys like that who I think are playmakers. So I think they'll score points. There's a lot of overs to be had on this Arizona schedule, but I don't necessarily – I'm taking – what's the Arizona line?
5.
I'm going to go under.
Yeah. Dude, I think this could be 3-9 for the Wildcats.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a defeatist attitude coming out of Rich Rodriguez right now too. Like when he talks, I don't know. He was talking recently. I saw some from Pac-12 BD days where he was saying it's you get a master's in rejection when you're not recruiting at one of the brand name schools. Just things like that. He doesn't quite have the swagger he used to.
Yeah,
and So I don't have a ton of confidence in Arizona. The one thing before we move to Arizona State, the one thing that's fascinating about Arizona, they got this kid Donovan Tate coming in, who was a top 100 recruit coming out of high school, first round draft pick in baseball, who went on to a mediocre minor league career. He's 26, almost 27 years old now. He's walking on at Arizona with a wife and 3 kids, and going to dive into the quarterback competition. So that's just sort of an interesting footnote. It'll be fun to see whether or not he can sniff the field and regain his footing. But he's definitely a talented dude.
Donovan Tate, the next Brandon Whedon. He'll be really, really good for the next Arizona head coach. I'm going under. I think it's 3-9 or 4-8. And like Rich Rodriguez, like super, super fun coach when he's got it rolling, like in terms of the character that he brings to the fabric of college football. But you're right, man. I'm not feeling the swagger at all. It's just not there. At Arizona State, the win total is just a little bit higher. At Arizona, it's at 5. Arizona State's 5. Arizona's 5.5. So we are.
That was surprising to me.
Yeah. So Arizona State, you've got more confidence in the Sun Devils. They were 5-7 a year ago. What do you like about this team? And like Todd Graham, after all that jumping around, you know, after really having part of his. Part of the jokes for Todd Graham, aside from the Britney Spears headset, were the fact that, you know, he had all the dream jobs in the world. Like, he went from a Tulsa to Pitt, from Pitt, you know. But he's, you know, this is his, he's been there 5 years, got a 39-26 record there. You know, you got a 1 Pac-12 South title. Like, he was able to do that. USC is down. We're going to go and we're going to win the thing, have that kind of season. You know, what inspires great confidence here? Because I'm not worried about Arizona State like I'm worried about Arizona in terms of, you know, the big picture. And certainly, you know, you can find the talented players between like a DeMario Richard or a Kalen Ballage, Mr. like what, 800 yards, whatever he had last year in that one game. I think that in the pecking order of the Pac-12, they are near the bottom.
I mean, I think that's a fair statement, but I think there's some reasons to think that they're going to be better this year. So, I mean, first of all, the win totals is 5, and they were 5-7 last year, and they return a lot. I think they'll be better. I think the one thing I like about this team, is Todd Graham has no one to blame for their lack of success other than himself. I mean, their defense has been really bad. And now he's got a defensive coordinator coming in and Phil Bennett from Baylor, who I think can maybe ground them defensively, can give Todd Graham take some off his plate and get another set of eyes on this defense so they're not just blitzing everybody in the world and getting roasted on the back end. So I think that they'll be better on defense. They've got, in my opinion, in JoJo Wicker and Caron Crump, a couple of the best defensive ends in college football. I mean, that's a really good pairing right there that can really disrupt some things. DJ Calhoun is really good at the linebacker position. He's a big hard hitter. And then, you know, unfortunately, Kareem Orr, who was one of their best defensive backs, transferred to UT Chattanooga because he got his girlfriend pregnant. Which is just crazy to think about. Like, if you think about, if you're a head coach at a college football team, you're,
I got
like,
my
you're
girlfriend
coaching
pregnant.
For your
I gotta
job
go.
This year. Like, you are trying to stay employed, and your best defensive back comes to your office, you know, in the spring and says, "Hey, coach, I got to go back home. I got my girlfriend pregnant." Which is, hey, man, go. You got to do what you got to do.
That's
like,
life.
That happens. That's life. But man, that's tough to swallow. Like, if you're the coach, like, man, that's tough to see him go. So they're gonna have to. They're going to have to address some things on the back end, but I still think they're going to score points. They've got Manny Wilkins coming back at quarterback. He's going to have to hold off Blake Barnett, the Alabama transfer. Kalen Ballage and DeMario Richards are quality backs with a lot of talent. N'Keal Harry's one of the best in the country at receiver. I think there's things to like with this team, and I like them going 6-6 and I think they'll have their moments.
Push 5-7. Just a hater. All right. Here's what I got. I think that San Diego State is a tough game. I think at Texas Tech in a season where boy Cliff Kingsbury needs every single win he can get is a tough game.
That could be another Thunderdome game there. Two men enter, one man leave. Like the loser of that game could be out.
You know, they got to go at Utah. You've got USC and Washington at home, but I don't have a ton of confidence that they're going to be like, that's going to be the trap for either one of those. Good season, decent team, solid team. Maybe they get one of those upsets like you're saying, but, 5-7. Give me that push. All right.
I can live with it.
All right. Wrapping it up. Justin Wilcox at Cal. You bring in Justin Wilcox because goodness gracious, there has been no defense in recent years as Jared Goff has been playing 7-on-7 football on his way to getting a NFL job. The Justin Wilcox move is with long-term thoughts, right? Like this is, we are seeing a total reversal of style at Cal that will take time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, total reversal in style defensively, I guess. I mean, I'm not even, I guess Wilcox is what? He's like a 3-4 guy. I don't even know what they were running last year defensively, but I mean, offensively, it's still going to be the same wide open spread system. They're getting the Eastern Washington head coach who's been putting up stupid numbers for that FCS program. So I don't know, like I wanted to hate on this team pretty bad. I was just on the surface I wasn't necessarily super inspired by the Justin Wilcox hire, and I didn't necessarily think that, you know, I was worried about the quarterback situation. Losing Davis Webb, I don't think they have the guy behind him that's going to necessarily step in and make a seamless transition. But the thing I will give Washington is, I mean, they got 8 guys coming back on defense, so it's not like, I mean, they don't have to rebuild defensively. They just have to start playing defense. And then offensively, they still are really, really good at the skill position. They still have a running back of Trey Watson, who's a good player. They've got some of the best wide receivers in the country from a talent perspective. Demetrius Robertson is an absolute beast.
Demetrius Robertson, who brought the Notre Dame truck down to Atlanta, Georgia. Right? Isn't he from Georgia?
Yeah. The guy that Cal beat Alabama and Georgia and
Notre
everybody
Dame.
Else on, you know.
Huh.
So he's
weird. What's in Cal's equipment truck?
But, you know, and so – So when I think about like how much am I worried about the quarterback position? Well, I think they've got an offensive system that's going to be able to minimize the need for like a big time quarterback. So I started talking myself a little bit into the over. I mean, it's a low number at 3.5.
Is it, dude? All right. So did you talk yourself into 4-8?
I may have talked myself into 4-8.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, is Justin Wilcox ready to rally the troops when this team starts 1-6 with its only win before late October coming against Weber State?
So let's say they go 1-6 and they would beat Weber State, and then they got Washington. So we got Arizona at Colorado, Oregon State at Stanford, at UCLA. Yeah, all right. I mean, I get you.
Yeah, like, and that's where I'm looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, like winning another game means that you've gotten a confidence building win, which you were probably an underdog, and winning two more games is the kind of stuff that you can build on.
Yeah, this is a tough team to figure out, and Justin Wilcox is enough of a anomaly to me. Like I don't quite know him well enough. Like I just know where he's been. I know what he's done. But I haven't seen his press conferences. I don't know what kind of presence he has. I've heard he's sort of like a quirky guy.
We've got that gif of him licking his lips from all those years ago.
that is a good go-to. I haven't gotten a good feel for like what he is as a leader yet, I guess. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's hard. This is a hard one for me because are they 2 games worse than last year? From a personnel standpoint, they're not. But I guess I get your point. So, you know, I'm hemming and hawing on this one. I'll stay over and let you work on the under. But it's going to be tough to get there.
Yeah, it's going to be real. And again, you get Oregon State, like that's a winnable game. They're at home. Arizona, like those games where like the final two Pac-12 home games are games that if it's taken a season to get all your stuff into place, at least those last two home games aren't, you know, USC and Washington, right?
I'm under. I'm back under. I'm just, like, there's gonna. I think Oregon State is probably a better team than them.
Oh, I definitely
probably
do.
Will be.
But I was just thinking, like, in terms of if you're gonna get somebody from the bottom of the Pac-12, at least you're not asking for it to be near the top.
And I think, you know, Justin Wilcox may be the real deal, and he may be a really good coach and may be the answer. But I still I think he can be the answer, and they can go 3-3-9, and just it takes him some time to get his system in place, because, you know, this is what I guess that now I'm thinking, all right, you compare him to Gary Anderson's squad at Oregon State. They were 5-7 when they took over the season before they took over. Then they went 2-10, just getting their stuff in place. So I think that's what we're probably going to see here is hey, and Gary Anderson now, that's the type of good team they have to beat. And I trust the team that's 3 years into the system over the team that's putting in a new
with a first time head coach
and a first time starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Barton, you're a beast. This has been a lot of fun. I've loved getting to bring our notes together, compare notes as we get set to really unfurl the season. So make sure that you're subscribed, because we're coming at you with all kinds of camp reports and some big topics and some guests, all that coming next week. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Barton, man, thanks so much.
Thanks, Luke.